It's time for the Daily Sports Dump. And I'm your host, Joe Canale. Yes, that's right, folks. It's your Daily Sports Dump, and I am your Daily Sports Dump host. Sports Dump host, Joe Canale. It's Thursday, November 21st, 2019. Let's get to the jokes. Sixers star Ben Simmons hit his first career three-pointer against the Knicks yesterday. Now, Simmons said it never even occurred to him to try a three-pointer while in college at LSU, since they gave him a 3.0 just for showing up. See, he already got the threes. Florida Gulf Coast University is under fire after mailing out offers to join the school's football team went out this weekend. The only problem is that the school doesn't actually have a football team. When asked about the snafu, the school representative said, "Big deal. Nebraska's been doing the same thing for years." I got to tell you, that one hurt, folks, as a Nebraska fan, but it's still an apropos joke. Moving on. Former baseball great Manny Ramirez says he doesn't regret his PED bans as the punishments helped him grow up. Ramirez went on to say that he was 5'8 before he started juicing, but quickly grew up to 6 feet tall. And United States women's national team soccer star Carly Lloyd told Rich Eisen she's serious about pursuing an NFL kicking job once her soccer playing days are over. When asked if she thought she'd be welcomed by NFL players, she said, "Oh, yeah. It's pretty clear most of these guys are pretty comfortable tackling women." All right, folks, those are the jokes for today, but it's not done. It's a throwback Thursday, and we're throwing it back about 6 months before we were really as popular as we are now, where we've got listeners in the teens, perhaps. And this is an interview we did beginning of June with ESPN personality Sarah Spain. We talk a little bit about her background, some comedy, and we get into an important conversation about inclusion in sports and in sports media, something that's really always important, but also given the recent Charles Barkley incident and ongoing things, I think this conversation is a very relevant one, and I hope you enjoy it. Please come back tomorrow for our Friday Daily Dump, and enjoy this interview with Sarah Spain. And we are finally here, and thank you so much, Sarah Spain, for joining us. I can't believe this actually happened. Thank you, Sarah.
Well, it took you long enough of nagging me and me getting things lost in my black hole of emails, so I'm glad I finally made it work.
Absolutely. It worked, and you got permission, which I also was a little dicey on, because I know Justin Craig, and I know if it ever... He both hired and fired me, and so if it crossed his desk... He justifiably fired me. Okay, you worked at ESPN Chicago. So, Sarah Spain, I think everyone who would be listening to this would know, you are a ESPN personality. Is that a fair one of the things to call you? A Chicagoan? Is that a fair thing to call you? Yes. And, and there are certain things. I lived in Chicago for 17 years, and I think there are things that you and I would agree that you epitomize in some ways about a Chicagoan, things that Chicagoans love about Chicagoans. And I, even though I'm a New Yorker, consider myself, for all cultural purposes, except for my sarcasm, to be a Chicagoan.
I don't know. We can get pretty sarcastic here too.
True, true. That is, you're right. The there is kind of that Eastern urban thing they share a little bit. I feel like New Yorkers are a little less polite, in my experience personally. Maybe I'm trying to justify myself. But when did you work at ESPN Chicago? That's what I wanted to ask.
I think I started in the spring of 2010.
Okay.
I believe, is when I first started with the radio station in Chicago, ESPN 1000, and I was there for about 5 years doing updates and the occasional fill-in hosting before I switched over full-time to national.
Yes, yes. I had heard of you and heard you before I had seen you, because you were a radio personality locally for me. So I worked there a couple years before. I was doing something Second City every once in a while, like I was saying to you off-air. They try to work something in with an ESPN or something, and for a year, a friend of mine, we were writing bits for the radio shows. We'd come in every week, and we did it for a year, 3 1-minute scenes every week. So that's like, you know, 150 scenes, and they didn't use any of it the whole year. So at the end,
that's
when Justin was like, "Listen, I like it, but no one's going to use it. So why are we doing this?" And we agreed. We were like, you know what? We got away with this for a year, but we do have tons of bits about Brett Favre and basically the Bears at the time. So you know, real local stuff that again nobody listened to. So you were at ESPN in 2010 at the radio, and did you do Second City in Los Angeles or in Chicago or both?
I did Second City in Los Angeles, yeah, the full conservatory out in L.A. And unfortunately, since I've gotten back to Chicago, I haven't really had a schedule conducive to getting back to do anything, and I miss it a ton.
Sure, sure. Okay, and that was after your radio days in Chicago?
No. So I moved out to L.A. shortly after college, and I was there for 6 years trying to do more in the way of acting and comedy stuff.
Great.
And so I did a class in like a hosting boot camp over a long weekend where they suggested improv, got into it, then did the full conservatory and finished up actually the summer before I moved back to Chicago. So that was before all my radio stuff.
Got it. All right. Have you ever done the set at a Second City show?
Nope. I did, you know, the shows that you sort of culminate your stretch run in for each of the levels of the conservatory.
Absolutely.
And then that's when I moved back to Chicago. And it really, the next steps would be either to do a writing conservatorship or get into the, you know, the company or regular cast. And I've been plugging along at ESPN and sports shows ever since. So.
Isn't it fun? Like, I think for anybody in kind of the entertainment industry, however, whatever angle, sometimes you just go in one direction and then it just forks you without you even knowing. And excuse the weird pun in terms of forking you, but like it goes over in a direction you didn't foresee. Like, you have no need to be on the Second City main stage now.
I would love to and I miss it, and there's a part of me that feels like, you know, I had one of the co-creators of Billions on my podcast, and Brian Koppelman, and he talked about being a shadow artist, where you don't fully commit to the thing you most want to do. You find something that's kind of alongside that, because you don't have the confidence or the belief that you can, you know, achieve the thing you most want.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like I'm doing that, because sports was never my dream. It was always to do Saturday Night Live, or something like that. But I think you have to make a choice as an artist of whether you do the thing maybe you were meant to do and you're more suited for, or the thing that you dreamed about that maybe you aren't. There's an aspect of wanting to get back into some more comedy, entertaining stuff on the side. I don't want to give up what I'm doing, but I think I'm in a position now where I could probably try to do a little bit of the other stuff. I definitely don't need to be on a main stage show, but I definitely, whenever I go to them, I'm like, this still makes me want to get back and do.
Well, you can do the sets
on a show.
That's what I'm saying now, though, is that you can do the sets, because I think you are recognizable. If I was on the main stage and saw you at a show, I would certainly ask you to come do the set. And if you ever, again, of the very little hookups I can offer anyone, I can still get people into a Second City show. So if you ever want to go, let me know. And then I'll tip the cast onto your presence, and then you can go up and you can do the set. And
there you go.
See? And in Chicago, more people are going to know you than any of the people on the main stage, certainly. So you're gonna get better cheers than them. Again, I haven't seen their show, so I hear the current one's good, though. So, so you're talking about maybe having opportunities now that you have, you know, to use comedy. Do you have interest in blending comedy with sports, or are you looking to kind of just kind of straight do it in another venue?
Well, so when I first started, actually, it took a lot of what I learned at Second City and cultivated there into my first sports gig in Chicago. So I started with a website called Mouthpiece Sports that was supposed to be sort of the voice of the athlete, without the spin of being affiliated with any newspaper or television stations in the area. And so, you know, for instance, I went to Peanut Tillman, one of the Bears players, charity flag football game. And instead of doing a straight interview about what it meant to have his teammates come out and support him, I instead mic'd him and I up and did a bit where I was trying out to be the newest wide receiver of the Bears. But, you know, he's got a great personality, so he was essentially just making fun of my route running and my posture when I ran and everything else. You know, or I did a bit with the Cubs after Carlos Zambrano destroyed a Gatorade cooler, interviewing all the players about what it means for their hydration specialist to go to the DL, and why was he always kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time, and what were they going to do for hydration needs, and when is he coming off, or whatever. So they're all sort of like a little bit more based around the idea of combining coverage with this idea of sort of yes and what can I get these players to play along
with. That's
and I don't do that as much anymore, unfortunately, just it's not always the right fit depending on which part of my ESPN job I'm at. But I've certainly been able to do Halloween episodes of Around the Horn where I get to do accents and sing and be in costume, and I definitely think some of the bits that I come up with for TV and radio are influenced by my desire to bring in some of that like performative stuff.
That's great. I mean, that's what I've been basically trying to do my entire career is walk that line to varying degrees. There are certain obstacles I think you always run into, the affiliations with the leagues being one, where if you're on a platform like ESPN, you can only go so far before the NFL, who has really no sense of humor about themselves, unfortunately. You know, they put their foot down, and I'm not saying in any way that like you're filtered, but I just think the partnerships, in a way, like they color what you can and can't do, like Ballers, for example. And then what you're talking about is like journalistic integrity, where you want to, you know, ESPN again walks that line of entertainment and journalism. So you want to present yourself as being informed and professional. And so if they're doing bits, can it be both? It's rare that you have something like a Kenny Mayne or what Levitard is able to do, you know. And even in that context, Stu Gotts will never have respect.
It depends on how you want to view what
I love him
and how he sells it.
Yes.
But I think the other aspect, too, is that with comedy and sports, there's a level of knowledge that's necessary for some of the jokes to hit.
Yes.
So you have to find the balance of how informed is my audience?
Yes.
And will they understand these jokes because they need to have this base level of sports knowledge?
Yep.
And if you don't go deep enough, then the people who are very versed are going to think it's very surface level and not particularly compelling. So I think it can be really difficult because for a long time I thought what I wanted to do was sort of like the Daily Show for sports.
Yes.
But all of those things come up, essentially.
The
access to the rights, there isn't the same ability to get all the footage that there is with news because of, you know, open sourcing for is very different when it's a rights organization like a league.
Yep.
A lot of athletes and coaches aren't going to come appear if you've done something to one of their teammates or opponents or someone else within the league. They'll all boycott you.
Yep.
And then it's just a level of knowledge that's required to get the jokes. So, it's very complicated. I think there's ways to bring satire and smart comedy into sports, but it's not just a sports copy of what already exists in, say, the news world.
That's you're right. It's a narrow audience that both gets the jokes and wants the jokes. You know, because there's such a percentage of sports people, and that's, you know, you don't get the show bit. And I'm sorry I keep going to that, but that is a show that I hear you on and listen to all the time. And that is kind of, in my estimation, the best example of doing that at this point. The closest that I got was actually a show in L.A. It was called Fair Game, which is the name of a current show, I believe. Another sports show has picked up the name. It's getting tossed around. And it was kind of like a daily show for sports. Now, that show failed, but we did more episodes than Simmons, but that is not really a sign of success. It's just a sign of less failure. though I do love Bill Simmons. I always rip whoever I love. I'm sure, I don't know if you've ever felt like I've been trolling you, but that's what I do with my Second City friends, is I rarely on Twitter will actually tweet. I will just reply to a tweet often. Now, many of the tweets I send to you are apologies on behalf of humanity, because this is not something I necessarily, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but just the, I guess this can go into the conversation about inclusion. As a woman, obviously, generally, before I say anything about in the media, as a personality in sports, you have obstacles to overcome on social media. And then as a media personality, that introduces another level of criticism, trolling. And then you're in sports, which has another kind of whole hurdle that is still being jumped over, which means about what, a third, hopefully, don't say more, of your Twitter engagements are bad?
Oh, I wouldn't even be able to judge, especially considering how many people have now been muted and blocked. Therefore,
yes,
I don't get to see what they're trying to offer up.
Good. Well, that's sorry.
Well, and it really depends on what I'm talking about. You know, there's certain hot button issues that, for whatever reason, they most anger the trolls.
Yes, so sometimes, right.
Sometimes it's not so bad.
Well, here's the thing that I have discovered, and you know, Julie Dicario. Am I going to say your name right? I think you're friends with
her. Yeah, you got it.
Julie Dicario or Caro?
Dicario, yeah.
I follow her as well, and she obviously experiences a similar kind of thing. And sometimes you guys will, you know, I think correctly, retweet some of the more memorable, horrible, inhuman, disgusting ones. And that's the only recourse. But I'm guessing a lot of these people are just opening up accounts just to send a bunch of troll tweets, and then they just open up. Is that how it works?
Yeah, there's certainly people who I think have created. There's one guy who I think is up to somewhere around 40 accounts to keep sending me the same messages on Instagram and Twitter.
I waste a lot of time, but that is a real waste of time.
A real waste of time. Well, and that's honestly what I tell people for the most part. You know, if I'm having a bad day and a couple different people tell me I look fat or gross or ugly, you know, it certainly doesn't make my day better. But for the most part, I tend to feel sympathy for the people and pity for them more than anger, because I don't know people in my own everyday life who would want to spend their time doing that. And so they must be so dissatisfied with their own lives and so unhappy that instead of making me angry, why would I give someone that I don't know, that's a cool person that wants to waste their time doing this, any space in my head?
Yeah.
So it doesn't make me angry. It makes me sad for them.
Well, I'm glad you're able to muster up sadness. I can be sad for ignorance sometimes, and I do get, you know, I used to be a very bad reply aller on emails, and I discovered that was when I was in a bad place, and combined with the fact that nobody ever BCCs everybody, I would send some blistering reply alls, and I realized later on it was because I was in a bad place and taking it out on whoever didn't BCC everyone. Now, I don't think it never rose to the level. Often I thought it was actually good satire, but nobody wants to be satired on their office email. So so that would often be a problem for me. But what I discovered, so I worked at Second City right around the time when they were going from 7 to 2 white men, 7 white men and 2 white women. That was actually probably like 50s, 60s. Then they got up to like, all right, 4 white men, 2 white women. So we've raised the ratio, but we haven't increased any odds. And then, you know, every once in a while there'd be some diversity. But when I worked there in kind of the 2000s, they were getting better at diversifying. But something that happened, I worked in a show and they interviewed all 6 of us. 3 of us were longtime Chicago improvisers. We happened to be all, you know, Anglo white, they're my now wife, and my friend Brad, who I was talking about, the 3 of us, and then they had the other 3 who were a Hispanic man, an African-American woman, and a gay man. They interviewed them in separate things, And I don't know if that was on purpose or whatever, but our cast was fairly diverse and our show was about Barack Obama. And it was kind of in the interview process that I realized those of us who were of what the industry generally is, and for sports, I think this applies too, white men, there are so many of us who've been interested in it and have been in this world that there aren't even enough of the women and minorities in the culture to raise the numbers because they're not, they haven't been let in. You know what I mean? Like if women want to be in sports, there's so few women in the sports media, or let's say 10 years ago, that why would you be interested in it? There's no lesson for it. So when you're wanting to bring in more people, you almost have to overcompensate in the beginning just to set the example for everyone. Does that resonate? Is that clear what I'm saying?
Well, I think so. One aspect that you're hitting on, which is something we talk about a lot at ESPNW, both on the athlete side and the media side, is the idea of if you can see it, you can be it. And that for
right.
a lot of people, it's merely needing an example that exists already to go after something. And so I'm a perfect example. I grew up playing sports my entire life. I was a three-sport athlete. I got recruited for all three sports in college. I played Division I, track and field.
Heptathlete.
Michael Jordan. All of my requests for birthdays and Christmas were Jordan-related,
yes.
Chicago Bulls-related. It was very clear that I was into sports.
Yes.
But that wasn't fostered by people the way it might
right.
have been for a little boy.
Of
right?
course.
They would give me the book I asked for, whatever. My parents weren't really into sports, so I won't blame them for it. They did their best to buy me Bulls tickets for one of my birthdays, or they certainly facilitated all my interests, but they weren't going to be the ones who were going to sit down and talk about the game with me.
Sure.
And neither was anybody else in my life, because they didn't see a girl and think, oh, this is someone, let's go to games and foster this interest. And then watching, we didn't have ESPN when I was growing up, so I'd watch the Bulls and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it would be men commenting, men playing, men writing. So it just didn't occur to me. So I literally was out in L.A., working, at a PR firm and doing auditions for comedy and stuff, did the hosting boot camp, and I hosted a fake Chicago Bears show just to practice
right.
teases and opens and intros. And the teacher said, oh, you want to be in sports? And I said, no, there's no women in sports. And like the
right.
women are there don't get to be funny. They're either very serious anchors, which was sort of necessary because
sure.
people wouldn't buy that you knew your stuff
mm-hmm.
unless you were pretty serious about it, or very bubbly sideline supporters that had such a limited role and didn't really get to have a much personality.
Yes.
And so it just hadn't occurred to me. And she said, well, you seem very natural. You should try it, which is when I decided, listen, I'm going to take Second City and all the stuff I'm doing, and I'm going to try to create a space where I can be the entertainer and person I want to be, but within the sports construct. And it worked out for me. But that was, now I'm looking, and there are so many people writing me that their daughter is already growing up watching and listening.
Yes.
And they always have it on in their car because I'm the only woman on the radio in the regular weekday for ESPN and so many other stations.
Right.
So I think that's a big part of it, is it doesn't even occur to you, or you don't feel like you're invited or allowed.
Yep.
I think the conversation needs to mean, if you're listening to sports radio, not only do you not hear women's voices, but sometimes the conversations are exclusive.
Yes.
They make women and people of color and LGBTQ people feel not invited, and
well,
make
yes.
fun of and the butt of the joke so often. So then you combine that with what you were saying about wanting to elevate diversity and not being able to find it. So the answer is not to say I don't have enough women, people of color, LGBTQ, etc. applying. It's to say the pipeline that already exists and that I rely on is probably based on the relationships that have existed forever between white men who are lending a hand to other white men who they feel connected to and understand
right.
and are similar to themselves. So you have to go looking for talent
yes,
in
right.
places that you aren't always looking for.
Yes.
And it's extra work, but if you're actually committed to a diversity of voices, which is going to make your product better, you have to do that work.
Yes, and what I recognized, and I think it's okay for white men to admit that they were oblivious to their privilege at one point. You know, like.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And,
but I think
again,
that
makes people so angry when they hear about it. But it's not saying you got where you are because
right.
of it. It's saying of the reasons that you might have been prevented from getting there,
yes.
your race is not one of
Less
them.
Less obstacles
and that is
the main
case
thing.
For other people because of gender or race.
Right, right. It's almost not as much privilege as a lack of obstacles, I would almost say. Which is a kind of privilege, I suppose. just the regular baseline existence for a white improviser in Chicago is so different from even the improvisers of other ethnicities in Chicago. It's just a different experience. And what I discovered, so if I picked the cast, it would be my five, you know, white dude buddies who I hang out with. But the depth of information and the different experiences that you get ended up providing a much broader show that had both a broader appeal to the audience and more things for the more variety for the performers, you know, like, and there were things I learned within that process because of the diversity of that. And now Second City doesn't have as much of a problem again, because they reached out, they found the people, and they created the, if you can see it, you can be it. And now they have that pipeline built. So there's the benefits to that. And I think, I know we only have a couple more minutes, but I think it's important to, this is what I really wanted to say. Even on my favorite show, which is Le Batard Show, which reminds me a lot of an improv team, because it's mostly dudes. The one woman who's in the room most of the time barely gets a chance to talk. And I know that's not, you know, it's not by design. That's just her role and stuff.
Mostly by choice, yeah.
But again, it just reminds me of so many, you know, you got a bunch of sporty dudes kind of. Now, their room is a little more diverse than most of the Chicago improv teams I was on. But even with that show, which is about as, I hate to say woke at my age, I feel like such a dad when I say it. But even a show that gets it as much as them, I think in so many issues in sports, especially the kind of off the field stuff, women are often a victim. And when there's no one there to kind of represent that point of view, it just feels like it needs that. And even Dan, who knows that kind of, and tries to talk about things like that, I think he would admit that he doesn't have the full experience to comment on it. And that's why I think it's so prevalent now. Every day there's a story like that. You're almost obliged to have someone there to talk to those things.
Yeah, if by women being the victim, you're talking about stories that become big stories in sports about, you know, domestic violence or sexual assault, things like that.
Yeah, yes. No, yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. I mean, like the Baylor thing.
So often that's what it feels like, because there aren't in-depth great conversations about female athletes, right?
Okay,
so,
yes.
Deeply into Serena Williams' career or WNBA or women's soccer, unless there's some salacious aspect of it that feels easier to grab onto than having knowledge. And I don't blame people for that. There's a lot of things to know about, but you can decide to be invested enough to say the Women's World Cup is going to be massive. I'm going to educate myself on the players and the storyline. So the same way you do with something else in sports.
Yes, you just pointed out my blind spot there.
I do think there's an aspect of, I don't think every day those things come up, and I do think that, yeah, people need to be better at understanding the perspective and experiences of people who are different from them, and how necessary those are to go seek out when you want to have a conversation about something that you have no personal experience with.
Right.
It doesn't mean you can't talk about it. It means do your best to find a guest or someone to come on and shed some light on it. I do think there are times when, you know, Le Batard Show handles things so well. I think there are times when that's a bit of a blind spot for them.
Yes, and you just pointed out a blind spot.
I think you just have to keep talking about it and pressing on it, so that even people who think they're getting it right realize that there are still steps to be taken.
Yeah, yes. And you pointed out a blind spot of mine there, where I'm not even, you know, Serena is the most dominant athlete of our time. The women's national soccer team is one of the more dominant national teams, you know, in history. I think women's tennis is actually more interesting on the whole than men's tennis, because the men hit it so hard. It's like three shots, it's over. So there is, you're right. And I'm sitting here talking about only how it applies in that way, and I'm ignoring the whole other level, which probably, you know, thank you for pointing it out. And again, that's, you know, that's why I like to have these conversations. And then that's the whole point there. Without you here, if I'm talking to a guy about how women are not in the room, we're just talking about kind of the Art Briles getting hired in the high school thing. And that's what I mean by every day it is a story, because even if it's not the action happening, the forgiveness of certain people at the, you know, like those things are happening all the time. So I feel like, I mean, those issues are there, But again, if it's me and a guy talking, we just dwell on that and ignore the whole element of what about women's sports? What about that? So thank you for bringing that to my attention. And it also, I think, illustrates the point that you and all women in the sports media, there could be more women in the sports media. And that's not something I would say. Again, when I worked at Second City, I would want it to be more white dudes to preserve my odds and everything. But I learned the benefits once I got there. And, you know, again, I had the job at that point, so there may have been no envy or anything. But once I was in there, in that experience, I was no longer ignorant to it. And it's okay to be ignorant to these kinds of things as long as you acknowledge it and try to correct it. I don't know if that was connected to what we were saying, but I just kind of blathered
on. No, I agree. I mean, I think that's mostly what people are asking. I think there's a danger right now in social media of being so reactive to people who don't seem to get it.
Yeah,
and so we do this, like, cancel culture thing where we decide that we're going to, like, someone is done and they can't be taught or forgiven. But I think part of that is because there's a defensiveness on social media that even if you're doing your best, if you get called out for being inadequate, you're rushing to defend yourself and prove why you were right instead of saying, okay, I didn't realize I got this wrong. Let me get better. And so the person on the other side needs to then say, I'm so glad you're acknowledging a desire to learn and get it. Let me help you with that. And so we need to be in a better place where we're saying to people, I don't expect you to totally understand because some of these experiences and perspectives may have been trying to be expressed for a long time, but this might be the first time it's in your orbit. Now, there are some people that there is absolutely no excuse for, depending on the position, their job, age, whatever, for them not to have come around and heard this perspective before, right?
Yeah.
But there are things that are changing in our society, and the desire should be to help somebody get to where they need to be, not just to shout them down for not getting it.
That's a very mature perspective. and we all should. You're right. Social media, there's no filter. There's no reason not to write it, other than your own, you know, being a decent human being, which somehow is not enough of a thing sometimes for people. Like, it's just too easy to respond to something and not recognize that, oh, that's out there now and everybody can see it.
Agreed.
Sarah, this has been great. Do you still have 30 seconds for one quick game and then I will let you go?
I do.
I didn't even get to the Colby versus Cornell thing. Maybe if this Second City thing gets off the ground, we'll bring you in as a, you know, maybe a, you know, that's how we'll get your comedy Jones done. We'll do bits with you.
Perfect.
All right. Here's this game. This is a game. It's a guessing game. It's called THC or CTE. I will give a clue. You will tell me which it is. All right. Are you ready?
Okay.
You will guess.
Sounds very complicated. Okay.
This is a brain condition associated with blows to the head. Some symptoms are personality changes, depression, and aggression. What is your guess?
That would be CTE.
That is correct. All right, I have one more for you. This chemical compound found in cannabis has been shown to help brain injuries, aggression, depression, and pain. What is your guess?
Ooh, that would be THC.
That is correct. You win. No prize, unfortunately.
Wow, what a random game about two things that have nothing to do with each other.
Exactly. And you know what? The last game I tried to play was with David Sampson, the former president of the Marlins. But the game I played was Famous GMs. So he was like, you know, I wasn't the GM. I was the president. So right off the bat,
Didn't do your research.
I did, but I forgot, and I thought I was clever because they weren't actual GMs. It was like Golda Meir and Garrett Morris and stuff like that. So, well, one failure. Sarah, thank you so much. You went a little bit over. Hopefully I'll meet you at some point if you, again, ever want to see a Second City show here or there or want to do a midnight show at the L.A. studio where you can do anything you want. I will be there to do bits. But
awesome.
You'll have to let me into ESPN. No, I mean, I'm at the ESPN studios. You don't want to come here in Studio City. You could have French toast here any day. We make it all the time.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and just insult Stu Gatz and think of me when you do it.
I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye. Once again, special thanks to Sarah Spain for doing the interview in the first place and letting us put it up a second time. Talk at you tomorrow.